Thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. We spend a lot of time talking about how important it is to take care of your mental health. Therapy is an excellent way to do that. BetterHelp is an affordable mental health care option that fits right into your busy schedule. Just answer a few quick questions about your needs and preferences, and BetterHelp will match you with one of the thousands of experienced mental health professionals in their network. You can talk to your therapist over text, chat, phone, or video. You get to pick what works best for you, your comfort, and your schedule. If you feel like your therapist isn't the right fit, BetterHelp makes it easy to switch to someone new at no additional cost. So give it a try and see why over 2 million people have used BetterHelp online therapy. BetterHelp is offering our listeners 10% off their first month of therapy. Just go to betterhelp.com/musicspeaks to get started. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/musicspeaks to get 10% off your first month of therapy.
Like so many of you, we battle depression during life's many ups and downs.
Music has always been there to help us through the tough times that we all face.
Follow us on our journey as we discuss the healing power of music.
Interview artists and bands.
Break down genres and music news.
Review artist biographies.
And much, much more.
You're listening to the Windward Fail Music Speaks Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Windward Fail Music Speaks, where we fight depression with the power of music. I am your professional handicap host, James Andrew Cox. And I got another interview today. Great interview, great guy. His name is Tom Sweeney. He is the member of Blackgrass. That's Black, G-R-A-Z. You know, it's almost like, you know, because I got to pinpoint it out, you know, because many people, I looked it up, but I didn't see him, you know, so... Tom, welcome to Windward Fail. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me, James. It's a real privilege.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. Yeah. So you contacted us. So I just want to know, first of all, what made you want to come on the show? Because I know a lot of people say it's because of the title. Did you? I mean, was that your main thing? I'm like, oh my God, this is, you know.
That is accurate. Yeah, the title was what caught our attention. It was actually my wife that found you.
Oh, nice.
We reached out and you accepted. And so we're obviously trying to build the Blackgrass name so folks, you know, recognize it more, especially with traveling all over the country. Every opportunity you can to just talk about the music, you have to take it. So I really appreciate you saying yes.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Well, I'm trying to help out as many musicians as I can, because I'm sure you know, like, promotion is key in this industry, and it is super hard doing this by yourself, you know, like me. But I imagine you have help with your wife, you know. But that in itself can be really, really tough, right?
Well, it really helps, though, to we work well as a team. We're both creative. She's an author, actually. She has 19 different novels out, and she's releasing a new one. And, it, you know, so she's in that mind space, too, about not just being creative, but trying to, you know, get folks aware of what you're doing. And now that we're traveling all the time, it makes it a lot easier to stay focused.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So before the show, I found out that you lived in Tennessee, and I expressed my joy of going to Nashville sometimes, you know. So have you all been like have you all lived there for years, or you just, you know, got moved there for the music career?
Well, I apologize. We don't live in Tennessee at
okay.
all.
Okay.
Yeah, you asked where are you now, and I took that literally.
Okay, yeah, I'm sorry.
That's busy all right.
Day. Yeah,
we're at this moment we're in Charleston, Tennessee, and I'm playing in the area a few shows. But we're now from San Antonio, Texas. We have land in Texas, and we're very, very pleased with you know, Texas, and we have a lot of friends there and a lot of roots there now. So that's where we call home, but we've been traveling nonstop since June of last year. So we're coming up on a whole year of just nonstop going city to city and state to state.
Right. Yeah. Nice. I gotta ask you this, and I'm sorry if you've been answering this a lot of times. So Blackgrass, Grizzly, why the extra, letter?
Well, there's two, there's a letter missing. Black is BLAK, right? And Graz. There's a couple reasons for that. When I started doing Blackgrass as an outlet for my own original music, I didn't want it to be limited. I wanted to be able to play whatever style I wanted because most of my career had been spent playing what other people wanted to play. Even in original projects, you had to suit, whoever your singer was or whoever the rest of the band was. There was a time where I had an original project that I had started, and I still had to kind of fight tooth and nail to get the drummer and the bass player to kind of follow along with the different stuff that I wanted to do. They didn't like that, or didn't want to do certain things. So when I started Blackgrass, I wanted that freedom, and so the name was supposed to reflect a few of the different styles that I wanted to pull from most immediately, but also to kind of neutralize folks' minds when they heard the name, make it memorable, short and memorable, but they wouldn't know exactly what to expect. So the black being more kind of the rock side, because I like that intensity. The grass being bluegrass, country, folk, and then the Z at the end to kind of slip in the AZ of jazz, because the definition, my favorite definition of jazz music, comes from Andy Summers of The Police. It was in a foreword for a guitar instruction book I had years ago. And he said, really, the only distinguishing characteristic of jazz compared to any other style of music is syncopation. That's the only thing that's really different. So, technically, according to what he said, any style of music could be considered jazz if it has some syncopation in it. And I'm a huge fan of that. I love the upbeat, and I love anticipation, and I love the tension that that creates, and then you release later. So that was the first reason. Mix those styles together in a name so that people, when they hear all the different stuff that I play, they're not too terribly surprised. That kind of sets the stage. The other reason was a little more practical. When you spell Black Graz that way, what you find is that there's nobody else using that name. And so you have a whole lot of space around the world to establish yourself pretty quickly for not much money.
And it's good that you're right with it being the only one in existence, because not many people can confuse you for somebody else. Because there's been times when I've interviewed a band on here, and I looked up the name, and it was the wrong band. I'm like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Can you come back on? I was like, oh, Jesus Lord, yeah. So for every artist out there, please, determine what your name's gonna be. But the reason why I love your music the best is because what you just said. You have three different genres: rock, country, and jazz, and I think it's good for everybody to come to your show, because they might expect something like rock, but then you throw out a country song for those country or country lovers, and that makes it like 10 times better,
Yeah, that's one of my favorite parts of the show at this point is I have actually 110 songs published now in 11 different styles of music, including Cajun Zydeco. Recently, I wrote three songs, so I can kind of read an audience and see what they're enjoying more, even as the night goes on, and shift gears seamlessly. Because when I start, I don't stop, I don't take breaks, so I'll do 3 or 4 hours without stopping. And it's all original music. So every song that I play for that whole time is an original song. And it's so much fun now at this point. There's a whole different level of confidence, basically, when I start playing a song. I know how certain people are going to respond to each song that is in my show. And that's how it used to be for cover music for me. If you played a popular cover song, like a Journey song or an Eagles song, you knew that people would respond a certain way to those tunes, right? Fleetwood Mac or anybody, or even the newer artists, Nothing But Thieves or Muse or anybody newer. you know, if you play a song that's popular, a cover song, certain people are going to like that. Well, now I'm to the point with this show that because my songs are written to kind of emulate all of the famous artists that I loved and I used to cover, I know that people are going to respond to those certain songs the same way, right?
Yeah.
If they're a Hank Williams Jr. or Senior fan, I know that they're going to like the song Last Night, or they're going to like Kisses That You Steal, or they're going to like, you know, I've Got a Song for You, or all these different songs that are similar to those styles, right? And it's really amazing to watch that happen all over the country, everywhere we go. You'd think each area would be a little bit different. But what I'm finding is my show gets reception, really, really good reception everywhere we go. And we've been a lot of places in this last year.
Yeah, it's amazing because you like if you pronounce yourself as a rock band, you'll only get rockers, right? Metal or like rock and roll, right? But has there been a show where the audience, because I'm sure one or two are not very fond of other music that you play, you know, because you have Die Hard this, Die Hard that, you know. Was there ever like a tension between you, the fans listening to the music you were, you know, producing?
Well, there's every show you're going to have somebody who doesn't like what you're doing at some point.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's for every band that plays, even famous bands, right? You know, there's some people that don't like Bruce Springsteen. They just don't like his voice, or they don't like Sting, or they don't like whoever, right? So you never focus on that.
Right.
You try to read what the majority of the room is enjoying, and then you go with that and you try to engage with them as much as possible, because usually what happens is it becomes contagious. That good feeling becomes contagious, and the people, either you'll win them over. And because I'm playing so many different styles, I'm playing cover rooms as an original artist. And I mean, that's unheard of. And I've even had some musicians say, no, that's impossible. You can't do that. You can't play all original shows in cover rooms and get paid. And I'm getting paid more than I've ever been paid when I played covers.
Okay.
So it's a miracle. I'm telling you what, James, it's a real miracle. Yeah. But then when you're working the crowd, if you can get them to stay long enough, and one of the tricks, of course, is to just really talk to them and you engage them, then they kind of let their guard down and they're not so, you know, standoffish or judgy about what you're doing. And they start to just relax. And then they hear some of the different styles, and I'll even ask folks, what style of music do you like?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll play something from that style. And the fact that I engage them, I know their names, and I'm asking what they're like, what they usually like, and then I'll play something that's similar to that, even though it's mine.
Right.
They almost always warm up to that. And even if they don't, then they'll probably just leave. And the rest of the folks that stay just have a great time, and that's what you want.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, because so many bands that bands starting out, and I'm sure you've got asked to do some cover songs, you know. Mostly when you're starting out, it's the cover songs that brings in the fans, and then you release your original. You're doing the exact opposite, which I love. So is it safe to say you are like a trendsetter? You're changing the way the game is that now?
Oh, I don't think I'm changing the way the game works. I think I'm just taking advantage of a need. Right now, you know, the big royalties companies like ASCAP and BMI are just gouging venues. And that's how I got started in Texas doing this. It was 3 years in Texas building this show. I got tired of playing covers. I was just going to quit. And my wife said, well, why don't you just play your own originals? And I said, well, no one will pay me.
Right.
But,
yeah.
You know, I'll just start doing that. At least I'll be playing and I'll enjoy it. Well, I went to a place called Chris Madrid's in San Antonio, a real famous burger joint there. I said, just let me come in for a Saturday and play 2 hours. And if you don't like me, I'll never come back. But if you do, hey, maybe we can work something out. I got done after the 2 hours, and they asked me if I could do every Saturday. And they said the reason was not only because I was good at what I was doing and it sounded good, but because ASCAP had just tried to charge them 10 grand an additional 10 grand to the licensing they already had to be able to play Muzak in their speakers, right? Not have live performance. Trying to charge them $10,000 extra per year to have bands come and play. So because I played all originals, they don't have to pay that. So they wanted me to come every week. And thanks to Chris Madrid's doing that, I was able to build this show to what it is now. Now, obviously, it's expanded a bit since then because I've been on the road for a year and I'm writing new material. But Chris Madrid's really was the foundation of building this show out so that I could take it on the road. And it was because of ASCAP. So I'm not really transforming the industry myself. I just saw a need and I got lucky.
Right. Yeah. Because I don't think you would charge people to like that $10,000. That's way too much money for anybody, you know.
Ridiculous.
So I'm like, what? That's so stupid, you know. But the fact that I mean, you're charging them, but not as much as you know, like Guns N' Roses would be, you know. I think that's.
Imagine, James, for just a moment, they're doing that to how many millions of venues across the country? 10,000 times millions.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And that doesn't include the royalties they get from the radio play and all the other stuff and the internet and all that, right? That's just ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. And I'm not a big fan of them, to be honest with you. And I know there's probably a lot of artists that'll watch that statement and say, oh, well, someone's got to protect your material and you got to protect. And, but you know, I just need people to come out to the shows and have a good time, man. That's what I need. Yeah. So if there's going to cover band is going to cover a Blackgrass tune, talk about an honor, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah, totally.
These two, that would be wonderful. I can't even imagine that. That would be a dream come true to hear walk into some venue and hear somebody start playing one of my songs.
Right,
I'd probably jump on stage with them and start playing just for the fun of it, you know?
There you go, right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, because I saw like a documentary where these venues aren't doing as well as they did back in the day, you know, because I think Ticketmaster tells them what to charge or some kind of, you know, gimmick. But I think I think that you're doing a really good job, you know, not charging the venues that much, you know, because it's your own music and you own the songs as opposed to like a big corporation owns your music, you know. So, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that was a big part of the decision, you know, to not include big companies like that, because not only as far as creative control, but I'm not a fan of corporations and the federal requirements that, you know, require them to increase their bottom line no matter what from year to year for their investors, because that means that, you know, the customer, the people who are loyal to what you're doing get gouged, they get hurt. And I'm not interested in that. I have no interest in that.
Yeah. Well, I gotta give you some praise here, because you are probably the best guitar I've ever heard in my life. You sound just like Steve Ray Vaughan, and I say that with full pride, you know, because I'm like, am I listening to Steve Ray or Tom? I'm like, this is out. So,
okay, so hold on a second now. I'm going to ask you to retract that because I don't want to get struck by lightning, all right?
Oh, yeah. No, you're safely inside your house, right? Okay. Yeah.
Steve Ray Vaughan is still the best. And I can, I can only dream of coming close to that guy. He is a monster. But I really appreciate what you said. It's very generous. I think it's a little too generous, to be honest with you, though.
I don't think so, because, I mean, you have his tone, you have his speed, you have his style, you have his like stuff. I'm like, dude, this is my, yes. So you are Steve Ray Vaughan 2.0 if it's just me.
Well, James, you're my new best friend then. But I can't agree, but I really appreciate the generous praise. It's very kind of you.
Yeah. So then I would imagine that Steve Ray Vaughan was a big influence on your life.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, he's probably the best mixture of intense energy, passion, and skill.
Right.
That I can Mark as an influence. However, you know, I've got several influences, like Andy Summers from The Police is a huge influence. Yeah. Jimi Hendrix obviously is a big influence. You know, there's a lot of guitar players that I wish I could sound like, but I came to this realization a long time ago that if I wanted to sound like them, then I would, right? I would practice that style. So if I say that I want to sound like Steve Vai, for instance, right, who is just incredible. Yeah. Is, I mean, just so smooth, and the technique and the incredible ideas and the really interesting way to approach music and the guitar playing just in general, just the stage presence and the ability to perform and entertain while doing all of those amazing things on guitar. If I wanted to play really like him, then I would have done that more. I really love what he does and I appreciate what he does, but it isn't really what I identify with. I have a tendency to get I just bang the guitar too much to play like Steve Vai.
Yeah.
I just bang. I have a tendency to, you know, hurt myself or hurt the guitar or break strings, you know, because I just get excited. I have a tendency to get too excited. In fact, it's taken a long time to be able to calm myself down on stage enough for certain parts that require a lot of focus. So it's kind of funny that you say that, but yeah. Stevie Ray Vaughan was able to harness that kind of intensity and still stay focused,
right?
You know, which is inspiring to me. I'm hoping someday that I can reach that point.
Yeah. So have you beat up one of your guitars to like a end repairable, you know, cause I'm always so super worried that Paul Stanley, you know how he destroys his guitars at the end of the concert. I'm like, oh my God, where's the glue? Fix it. You know, cause it's like, you know, so have you destroyed like a guitar to like beyond repair, you know?
So Paul Stanley stole that from Pete Townsend, first off. Okay. So let's give credit where credit's due.
Yes.
Okay. And while it's a great, it can be a great show stopper. I'm more of the Jimi Hendrix, Stevie Ray Vaughan approach, where you're not beating it up to destroy it. You're beating it up to see what kind of sounds you can get out of it. And okay. I used to do that in New York a lot when I played in Greenwich Village. You know, I had the honor of playing at CBGB's and the Lion's Den and Arlene's Groceries and some really, really great places. And I used to do a lot of that, you know, get the guitar to feedback and bang on it to get different noises, put long delays on it and make it sound really spacey and weird. And I'm pretty good at that when I want to. I just haven't done it in a long time. So I've never beat up a guitar to the point of being unrepairable.
Okay.
However, the senior guitar of the group is Tiff, and she's a Strat from 95 that was a 62 reissue. And she has some serious war wounds, and she's also been bled on a bunch of times. That would be the one who I think has received the most beating, because when I was using her initially, I was playing a lot in New York and original clubs on the Northeast, you know, the tri-state area, and up and down the coast, actually up and down the East Coast a little bit too. So there was more damage done to her because that's kind of where I was in what I was doing.
Right. So there's no need for some Gorilla Glue on tour bus, right?
No. Yeah. You still need duct tape, Gorilla Glue, masking tape, you know, super glue. You still need all
everything.
Those things.
Yeah.
Just to keep everything running, right?
Yeah.
However, I've never taken a guitar and smashed it on stage because I find it to be disrespectful of the people who put so many hundreds and thousands of hours into actually making an instrument that plays well.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah.
You know, I would never even do that with a guitar that doesn't play as well, simply because it could be fixed enough that maybe some young kid could get started on it, and why waste it?
Yes.
You know,
exactly. That's like, I'm going back to where you said you're finding different sounds from your guitars as opposed to destroying them, which I think is very, you know, safe and so but instead of finding different sounds on the guitar,
going back to going to your songwriting process now, has there ever been like a sound that you've heard while like walking the streets or something that sparked a song idea?
Oh yeah. Oh,
Okay.
there's, I mean, every day there's inspiration. You know, the challenge for me right now is I've got, I think it's 10 now, because I just finished two more songs that are not finished, not just being recorded to be published on, you know, Spotify and all that stuff, right?
Right.
But not even to the point where I have backing tracks for them to play them live. And I guess I should explain that. So my process typically is I'll write a song and then create the track. So I play the bass and the drums and do the backing vocals and any keyboard parts, and then mix it all down for a live mix so that then I can play and sing with it at shows to see how people respond to it, and then to decide if I'm going to keep it that way or if I'm going to add to it or change things. Because once you play a song live, that's the only time you ever really know your song, right? You can rehearse it forever in a with a band or in a rehearsal studio or in your garage or in your on your couch, right? But
Right.
until you step on stage and play it in front of people, you don't really know your song, because then things go wrong. Inevitably, things go wrong on stage and how you recover them from that. But also, you can never anticipate how people are going to respond to your new song. You imagine that they might respond this way. You hope that they will respond, that they like it. But you never know that until you actually do it. So then, once you do it, then after you've played it for a while, you know exactly what you want in the studio version. Then I'll go back and I'll remix everything, finish putting lead vocals in, change anything, put in leads if I need them or if I've changed anything, and then mix it down to the studio version that then goes out through the distribution company out to all the streaming services and onto my website. So that process might be a little bit different than a lot of folks, but that's how I work.
Right.
And so, you know, what you're talking about there is the basically market research on a new song, right? So I've got too many songs already published, 110 plus about two or three, no, I'm sorry, five songs that I'm already doing backing tracks with that need to be recorded, and another eight or nine or 10 songs that I've written that are in my head and I have notes and lyrics and arrangement for that I haven't even recorded onto backing tracks.
Okay.
So I'm inspired every day. Every time
Yeah.
I pick up a guitar, everywhere I go, everything I see, there's something else that inspires me to, oh, I should write about that, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Speaking of inspiration, you know, you get, 'cause I always say, like, 'cause I've heard this saying like a while ago, it's music is everywhere you look for it, you know. Trees, birds, you know, everything, you know. But going back to you have a vast genre with music, right? So does your physical environment, you know, wherever you are, decide on what kind of music genre music that you write at that time? Or do you like, I want to write a like a rock song today, country song tomorrow? Jazz, like in a few weeks, you know, or does the environment that you get the inspiration from dictate what that song will be?
So, actually, all of the above. But before I get into that answer, I just want to mention, you said, you know, that there's music everywhere you look. Frank
Yes.
Zappa said it best. If you ever get a chance, read his book, Frank Zappa. He described the universe as one big, huge musical note. Now, the funny thing about that is, according to quantum physics, everything is vibration, which means that he was accurate, but he didn't even know it. It just, they caught up with Frank Zappa, that's all.
Right.
So now, as far as the different styles or how I'm going to draw, write, or, you know, it's always different. It's almost more often than not, it's when I'm actually just with the guitar in my hand and I'm practicing something, and all of a sudden I come up with something that I like. However, when I wrote the Cajun music, I was specifically focused on writing Cajun music for a particular show that I had to play. It was a Mardi Gras celebration in Alabama. They booked me because I'd played there before and they loved my show. And they asked, as a favor, could I please play some traditional style Cajun Zydeco because it's their big Mardi Gras celebration. Well, I had about 2.5 weeks, I think it was, before that show. They called me kind of last second. I had to go 6 hours out of my way, out of my normal routing, to get down to them and then to get back up to the next show that I was going to be playing. It was a lot of driving late night.
And of course, they called you the last minute, right? Right. Yeah.
They're like, yeah, can you do this? It's only 2.5 weeks away. And I was like, well, I have the date available because it was an off day, like a Tuesday. Of course, Mardi Gras, Fat Tuesday, right? Mm-hmm. But I didn't have any Zydeco, and they know that I don't do covers. So I compromised with them and I said, listen, I'll tell you what, if I can't play any Zydeco for you, when I'm setting up and when I tear down, I'll put on Zydeco music for the teardown, right? Or for the setting up, so that there's something going on and it sounds like Mardi Gras. But then I thought, hey, I'm going to take this challenge. I'm going to see if I can write even just one song. So I started listening to some really hardcore Zydeco, you know, Cajun music, like, what's that guy's name? I can't remember him now. I see his face in my head. Real famous Cajun Zydeco player. And I realized what the elements, the different elements that were mixed in that made it Zydeco. And it was very simple arrangements, very easy to emulate, right? So I came up with three ideas and was focused on making them sound as traditional Zydeco as I could, even to the point of where I make the guitar sound like the spoons on the metal washboard that they play for Zydeco. Yeah. And I was using rhythm guitar to sound like the accordion, you know, but it has a certain feel rhythmically. There's a swing to it. And I already knew French, so it was easy to throw some French in there in the words to make it feel more like real Zydeco. Yeah. So that was a huge success, but that's a good example of where, no, I focused, I wanted that particular style. So I went and did my homework, right? Watched a bunch of videos, listened to a bunch of music, and then picked the sounds that I liked, then found topics to write about, and then just wrote. So I hope that answered the question, at least.
I wish I could do that, you know, because 2 weeks is just kind of, you know, brush, you know, but I just wish I could just sit down, write a killer song within like a couple of days. I know I can't do that. You know, I tried, but I can't do that. But I'm sure for you, it's like it comes like second nature now, right?
I mean, it does now, but it did not always.
Okay, right. Well, yeah. Now you know how to. Now you know your routine and you got everything down. You're right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. When you hit about 100, when you've written and recorded about 100 songs, all of a sudden it just kind of clicks.
Yeah.
It's like that 10,000 hours to become an expert of something, right? You know.
Yeah.
So you hit song number 100, and even if none of those first 100 are any good, anything that you write after that moment where you have the click, the aha, the like, oh, okay, I know what to do here. I know what to hear. Oh, I can add this. Oh, this will be fun. You know, it's much easier and the quality is much better just because you have that body of material behind you. You know, some of my earliest recordings, it's like, ooh, I wish I could fix that, you know, or I wish I could change that. But that's where I was, you know, that was kind of the point of making those recordings. Because now I can look back at each of those songs and remember where I was in my life and where I was in my skill sets, you know, and see the growth, which is really exciting.
Yeah, there's so many bands now that are remaking or redoing their song from the past. I'm like, no, you don't need to touch those, you know, because that's where you were, and that look how far you came, you know. And a lot of artists don't do that. They just keep re-releasing, you know. And it just infuriates me to death. It's like, we love your old stuff. Leave it alone. You know, don't don't make it, you know?
Well, you know, I did that though. I've been through that too.
Yeah.
You know, for my first original project, I actually re-recorded songs because I couldn't seem to get them to sound the way that I imagined them. And so I always kept walking away from those recordings feeling frustrated. And then my last attempt to re-record old stuff made me realize that those songs are just what they are. And that's where I was. And I just have to let that go and move forward. But I've been in those shoes too. So I know how those guys feel when they just start re-releasing stuff. It's like, it's the weirdest thing. You think that it's just going to be something different, and it isn't. It's just you again, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Cause I think that, they keep on thinking that, the audio is going to sound much better when vinyl records and CDs are just as good as it, you know? So I don't really respond to reissues that much, you know, but I, you know, it is what it is. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So we have two more questions for you. Well, actually three. We're going to have a real fun one and then two hard questions. Okay.
Okay. Sounds good. Right. Bring it on.
So fun one. Okay. So we're in your bedroom and you're 14, 15 years old, okay? And we're looking around your room. Is there any, like, music posters around your room at all?
Well, you're making me work hard for this one.
Oh, no. Okay. So three hard questions, okay?
14 or 15, I didn't really have...
Yeah. You didn't have posters?
No, but I did have record collections.
Great, yeah.
So, if you're asking about record collections, it went the gamut from the Kinks to ABBA to Journey to the Police,
yeah.
Genesis, you know, a lot of different stuff. And then, you know, really weird 80s stuff too. And
yeah,
I had a lot of records.
Everything, right? you're like me and Ben. I listen to everything too. You know, I can't get enough because. Because in my late 20s or early 20s, I found Motown from my Aunt Molly, you know, and then she introduced me more and more to the Beatles and the rap, you know, so I listened to a lot of stuff too, just like you do. So I think that people that listen to a lot of different styles have more like an open mind, you know, than the ones that just stick to one. Especially music, you know, yeah.
Yeah, to be able to feel comfortable about lots of different styles of music, you really have to be open-minded. I'm a huge fan of classical music too, especially Baroque, because it's mathematically driven. I really like that element of it. But there's nothing can replace seeing a good orchestra or symphony live and in person. Mm-hmm. The power that comes off the stage is extraordinary, the energy that they generate. And the only thing I've ever found that comes close to that is hard rock. And I don't think, when I think of hard rock, I think of, you know, 70s, 80s hard rock, not the pop metal stuff, but the intense, passionate stuff, you know. Right. So, and it didn't even have to be heavy distortion. Sometimes it's just the way you sing. It can come across as rock. Yeah. But that is the closest to the feeling I could equate to seeing an orchestra. Or if you've ever seen the Japanese coda drums, that's an intense experience.
Oh my God,
especially live.
Cool. I got some homework to do, right? Yeah. So
but there's always something, right?
Always something, right? Yeah. So okay, so we have two I guess some harder questions. I don't know if the last question was hard for you because you answered that pretty quickly, you know. But okay, so we're gonna do like a Mount Rushmore of musicians or artists. You have four of them, okay? If we wanted to do five, you can have five, but we're gonna stick to four, you know. Okay, so who would be your favorite bands or artists of all time? You got four of them.
Well, the first would be Sting.
Okay.
That's one.
Yeah.
Then Stevie Ray Vaughan, right after Sting. Favorite artists.
Or like bands, you know.
I really still to this day I really love ABBA.
ABBA's great. Yeah.
Yeah. The songwriting and the execution and the vocals, and that was before autocorrect.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
You know who else I really enjoy? But I don't know if this is of all time, though. I really enjoy the Carpenters.
Okay.
Uh, they were extraordinary. If you ever really go and watch one of their live shows, or, and actually there's this one video of the Carpenters, the brother, well, they're doing a show in England, and I don't know if it's Carnegie Hall, but they had a symphony with them, and he did a classical piece on piano, this really difficult Tchaikovsky piece, and he is a monster on the piano. And I didn't know that. I knew he was really good, and they're singing these incredible harmonies, like 7-part harmonies live, and nailing it. And she was an incredible drummer. If you ever watch her drum solos from her live shows, Karen Carpenter, she was like Buddy Rich good, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Because they were vaudeville. They grew up in vaudeville, so they knew how to put on a show. And that was their style, right? That just became original material that they did a vaudeville show with. And you don't really appreciate that unless you've played music on stage and realize the skill level that's required to pull that stuff off when you listen to it. But you know, obviously Jimi Hendrix is a huge one for me, because there's that rock and intensity and experimentation with sound, right? That I just love. And he had this flair of stage presence too. He thought he was a terrible singer, but his voice was so unique and it was so iconic. You know his voice as soon as you hear it, just like you know Stevie Ray Vaughan's voice as soon as you hear it, just like you know Sting's voice as soon as you hear it.
Right.
But I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, you know, like Beethoven or Chopin, you know.
Yeah, because they were totally.
I mean, everything that we do is built on stuff that they did, which is built on stuff that people before them did. And so it's only fair. But I also am a huge fan of, you know, Marvin Gaye, you know.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
There's a lot of the R&B and the Motown stuff that, like you, I'm a huge fan of. In fact, you'd like the one song I wrote called Sweet Thing.
Okay.
So listen to either Sweet Thing. And it sounds like it's a kiddie song, but listen real close to it because that's a Motown song. It's actually a Motown arrangement. And then listen to You Never Listen. Okay. And those are both built on the chassis of Motown song and arrangement and rhythm.
Okay. Sweet Thing and You Never Listen.
And You Never Listen, yeah.
Oh, cool. I got lots of homework to do tonight. I'm excited.
In your spare time, James.
Oh, yeah. Well, I have a lot of spare time now. Okay, so last question is the hardest question ever. Okay. Ever.
Okay.
Okay. So, is there one song, artist, or album that you can listen to right now, but you can't tell me or your wife how it makes you feel deep inside your soul?
Wait, please repeat the question.
Okay. Is there one artist, album, or song that you can listen to right now, but when you listen to it, you cannot tell me or your wife or anybody else how it makes you feel deep inside your soul?
Okay, so I'm not sure I'm getting the question correct. So is there one song, album, or one song or album that I could listen to, but I wouldn't be able to tell you or my wife or anybody how it makes me feel deep down that I would want to listen to? Is that what you mean?
Well, okay. So when you listen to the song, you know, you immediately know how you feel deep inside your heart. Okay.
Yeah.
Is there one song that you cannot explain it how it makes you feel? It's so deeply emotional to you. Like you can't form the word.
Yeah, okay. There's a song. Okay. There is a song that there's a song that I turn to often, and it's very difficult to express in words how it makes me feel. Yeah, there is a song. Do you want me to tell you what that song is?
If you don't mind, yes, please.
Sure. It's Chiquitita by ABBA.
Okay. Perfect.
And it's really interesting because the beat in that song is very traditional. It's almost like Armenian Greek, but not polka, not like a polka. It's not fast. It's slow. But that song, for whatever reason, has a lot of meaning to me. I used to listen to that a lot to help myself feel better when, you know, things weren't always going great.
Yeah, well, that's your answer. You know, that's exactly what I wanted you to say. You know, because I find songs can do a lot of stuff to you. You know, but I just want to know if you had any one song that really you can't, you know, explain it, how it makes you feel. And I think you hit it on the head with ABBA. You know, because they're a great band too. You know, I mean, they're terrific. You know.
Well, it's hard to. I remember a time in my life where I was embarrassed to say that I liked ABBA, you know. But their music was, you got to remember that no one had ever done what they did before, right? We know it now, and it was just kind of like cliche. Everybody knows ABBA, and yeah, you hear it everywhere, and so, you know, all these musicals and movies, oh, big deal, it's ABBA. Oh, yeah. But you got to remember that came from nothing, right? No one had ever done what they did before. And to this day, nobody has ever replicated that. I mean, people have tried, and without those vocals, though, and I mean, I've heard people really try, you know, but without those two ladies singing the way they sang together, and then the songwriting and the execution on the instruments, because they were, you know, both of the husbands, I don't even remember their names, were, incredible musicians, incredible writers. Now, not every song of theirs is one of my favorites, right? There are some that are like, I don't really like that one, but I love all these, right? So that one song, though, for some reason struck a chord with me a long, long time ago, and it has never let go. Well, you know, a lot of their songs do, but that one in particular, for a bunch of different reasons that I can't explain, you know, that I could give examples of how it makes me feel at certain times in my life, but for whatever reason, it's like the first time you hear that favorite song and you just can't let go of it for the rest of your life, and you don't know why, and you don't ever even imagine that you didn't know about that song beforehand. Well, that would be the one, you know. That doesn't mean I don't love all the other stuff. Is you know, oh, it's this is real. I'm really glad you asked this question. There is so much good new music out there. And a lot of folks say, well, you know, the older stuff is better, blah, blah, blah. Well, you always say that because you're familiar with it. But if you're really looking and you're really listening, there is just an infinite amount of unmeasurable talent on this planet right now, very young, putting out material that is better, even better than the greats, all the greats, whoever you would list, and will someday be remembered as great themselves, or maybe never even discovered at all. That's not what's important. What's important is, did you get to hear it, and how did it make you feel, right? I mean, that's all that really matters anyway. So yeah, that's a really good question, though. Thanks for asking.
Sure. Well, thank you for taking the time to answer that. So that was my hardest question today. So I think you knocked that out of part two, you know.
Oh, thanks, James. I appreciate that.
Okay, so on your website, blackgraz.com, that's blackgraz.com. I think I saw you're doing a really long tour. You're going to like a lot of states, you know. So is there anything you want to tell the listeners about, like, when new music's coming out, or
Sure.
the, you know, stops you'll be making on the way to the tour?
Oh yeah, I mean, we're going to be well, we're in Tennessee now. We're going to be going to Kentucky, and then back down through Alabama, over, and then over to Pennsylvania, into Ohio, and then back down into Kentucky, and back over to Pennsylvania again, and then down the East Coast, and then for the end of the year, we're going to try and get down to Texas. So we're doing a lot of traveling. I would encourage folks to please join the newsletter, follow on any social media. We're on every kind of profile, you know, Facebook, Instagram, X, everything you can think of. Black Raz is there. If you just search Black Raz, you'll find literally thousands of pages of stuff. And even better is, you know, if you could follow on your favorite streaming service, whether it be Spotify, Tidal, Napster, Deezer, all of the different streaming services, even just following, even if you just don't listen right away, that helps so much to get up in the algorithms, you know, and have folks kind of experience and discover this new music that I have. Every little bit helps. You know, I'm just shooting. There's 8 billion or 9 billion people on the planet. I'm just shooting a small bit of it, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, I guess there's a lot of us on Earth. But so is there like an email, like a venue can reach out to you and book you, or if I wanted to book you at like the Senate, do you have like a email that I can,
Yeah, if they go to blackraz.com, BlackGraz.com, or you can email me at tom@blackgraz.com. So TOM at BlackGraz.com.
Cool. Well, I mean, because I have I got a venue over here called the Senate, and I would love to meet you in person. And
Oh, that's
here's some Steve Ray Vaughan 2.0, man. You got it,
Oh.
So,
Apologies. Let me ask, when you say that, what song were you listening to that you thought that?
I you know what it's just in my mind right now, but if you don't mind, I will text you it later.
Okay, because there's
Okay.
two in particular I think you're
Okay.
talking about. One is
Right.
called Swingin', and the other one is the new one that I just released called Good Vibes.
Good vibes. That's it.
Okay, is that
That's
it?
it. Yes. That's
Yeah.
yes.
I specifically was after what he did, and so I really appreciate you saying that. I'm glad you got to listen to it, and I really appreciate that that was what you got out of it. That was my goal.
Okay, good. Great. Because every time I'm like, okay, well, maybe he was summoning Hendrix instead of Stevie Ray Vaughan. It's Hendrix. Because Hendrix and Vaughan is like two perfectly, two individuals that sound similar, but are way different, So I just, yeah. So it's awesome that I got Stevie Ray Vaughan, So, all right. So we do honestly thank you for coming on, and I got a lot more to talk to you about, but please come back anytime you want to, and I will. I'll try to get you booked at the Senate here in Columbia,
Oh, that'd be
so
great.
so I can actually meet you one day, and we can hang out together, or
Yeah.
whatever. Yeah. So okay. Yeah.
We'll go get dinner before the show.
Yes. Exactly. That's right. And then talk more about music. So I can't wait to meet
Yeah.
you. Yeah. So all right. So yeah. Once again, thank you for coming on. And with that said, everybody, thank you for listening. And always remember, when words fail, music speaks. Bye, guys.